The Jerry DePoto Show, presented by Seattle Pump and Equipment on Seattle Sports Station.
Good morning, Jerry.
Good morning, folks. How are we doing?
We're good. It sounds like the weather has significantly improved down there since we left.
Yeah, we're now creeping into the low 80s, which is lovely, and the evening games are a little brisk, but very comfortable. It's solid. It's spring training.
A lot of talk about the beanie you were wearing last week on with us.
Big time. Went viral, Jerry. I don't know if you know that.
Kind of a viral sensation as people were curious about the hat, and then I started talking about how you took the hat off and your hair immediately sprang back into place, whereas I took my beanie off and I look like Yahoo Sirius from Young Einstein. So...
Well, my hair grows straight up. You know, it's somewhere between, you know, a John Hughes movies from the 80s and maybe Yuli Gurriel. But it is what it is. I'm comfortable with my hair.
What do you use in there? I mean, what keeps it so perfectly in place?
Yeah, actually, there's in spring training, I come to the ballpark as is, you know, and I get my workout in, and then I'll take my shower. There's a little bit of a styling wax that I'll use for lack of a better way to term it.
Okay.
It's not a lot. The hair sticks up naturally on its own.
Mm. Some guys have all the luck, Brock. It's just not right.
Yeah. Major league pitchers.
Right. Got a major league arm, president of an organization. Uh-huh. But better than that, his hair just grows straight up.
Brock, I believe, Jerry, you'll love this. The term that was coined was Jerry Dripoto.
Oh.
For the
Drippy. Drippy. Are you familiar with drip?
I am familiar with drip. I am not familiar with Dripoto, but I can make it work.
Hey, all right, let's talk a little bit about your team rather than your hair. And we'll start with your young pitchers. Logan had his first start. Kirby had his first start. Neither were spectacular. And then we saw Logan kind of bounce back quite a bit yesterday. Where are you on the sort of slow roll, the slow development of those guys this year?
Nothing stands as out of the ordinary. We're seeing with all our pitchers, you know, the between the first and the second, or even in some cases with our relievers, the third outings, we're starting to see velocity creep up, whereas with the starting pitchers, we're starting to see command and quality of secondary pitches improve. That's what spring training's for. And, you know, we feel like we're right on target for having the guys ready from, you know, from an innings or in spring training, what we reference as an up down, you know, just getting a guy up and down in the game out there for that third time through the line or the third inning. You know, that's the goal at this stage. For guys like Robbie and Marco and The Rock, and with George and Logan, we started a little later, so it's not quite as far along, but we think they're in a good place.
You know, one thing that struck me, Jerry, maybe surprised me the most being down there and seeing everybody work over the course of the week, was how hard these pitchers went. And I don't know if that is different now. I don't know if I just was totally uninformed, but, you know, we watched him throw a bullpen, and my thought, and I think some people's like, oh, they throw a bullpen, and then 3 days later they throw a bullpen. That's not the case. I mean, Flexen and Marco are getting after it, and they're doing long toss in between, and they're throwing, you know, the weighted balls, and a lot of the guys, obviously, with all the driveline technique, are continuing to be very active. I don't know. I didn't see a ton of babying of arms. I saw a lot of guys just really working and getting after it. Is that different today than it was in your era in the 80s and 90s, or is it kind of always been that way?
Yeah, I would say it's something in between those two. But, you know, what we do now is so focused on arm care. And, you know, when you are going to throw baseballs at the high velocity that today's pitchers throw, and it's never been what it is today. There's so many pitchers today that throw the ball 95 to 100 miles an hour. And in order to do that, you have to prepare your arm to be able to withstand the rigor of it. And that includes more long toss, more arm prep, you know, harder but shorter throwing sessions. And that's generally what we advocate for. And, you know, our guys throw regularly. You know, back in the 90s, we would come to spring training, would throw a bullpen every second day, and you ramp up into your innings, and that's that. And here it's a much more regimented program where we're trying to prepare the pitchers to withstand the kinds of velocity and spin that they're going to create. And, you know, it's more frequent, but shorter sessions that I think are preparing them.
Well, at the top of that, and you mentioned him, The Rock, and you know, we've looked at his, you know, spring numbers over the years, even some of his starts, Jerry, and I know that you had referenced to Salk and I, oh, I don't know, this offseason, saying, yeah, it was 16 games on paper between us and the Astros, but let's really, you know, do a deep dive and look at when Cal Raleigh and when, right, you know, the Rock came aboard and how different it was, you know, when you were that team and that complete team in the second half of the season. Well, that's going to require Luis coming out and maybe being a little sharper than he's been in some of the years past. Is he going to, with your guys' guidance, take a little different path ramping up to that first start of the season?
Yeah, sure hope so. You know, and right now his secondary pitches are a little bit further along than we would have anticipated. There's his command is spring training-ish command right now, and his velocity, like with the other guys, I guess not named Robbie Ray, it's eking up as we move along. And, you know, The Rock came in as a little further along than we would have anticipated based on some of the feedback that we got during his time with the Reds. And, you know, we've talked about this as we talked about with Felix in years past. You know, his off season is about rest and recovery, and he typically doesn't start throwing until later in January. And I think he got after it a little bit earlier this year in terms of throwing. We'll see if that translates into, you know, more productive, you know, outings in the early season. But, you know, if we get those 25 to 32 starts that he has historically delivered, I'll take them whenever they come.
Hey, Jerry, I asked Shannon about this guy yesterday, and it's somebody that I know you guys targeted this offseason and brought in, and we haven't talked a lot about him on this station necessarily, and quite frankly, I barely noticed him while we were down there, but that's AJ Pollock. What have you seen so far, and what can we reasonably expect?
He's been great, you know, he's been particularly exceptional in his prep and his adjustments to the things we do as opposed to, you know, maybe where he was a year ago. And, you know, so many of the programs we run, and this is true of 30 teams, it's just a little bit different than what other teams do. And AJ bought in immediately to the things that we find to be high value. He's been an advocate for them in the cages, out on the fields, with the younger guys. His work habits have always been standout, and he's been great in the clubhouse. There's the other thing with AJ, in addition to, you know, his, I guess, proficiency or general excellence over the years versus left-hand pitching, is that, you know, he's really only had one down year, that being last year, against right-hand pitching. We talk about him, and I'm quick to profess his quality against left-hand pitching. He's got a long history of being good against righties too. And so far in spring training, he looks very comfortable against both. He's handling the breaking ball well. I know he's spending some time in the cages, on the machines facing right-hand pitching. And I think that's it's a real positive for me, is that he's not walking in thinking this is no chance for me to go out there and play regularly. And it looks like that.
Do we got a new A-Rod?
We do have an A-Rod. He's in great. I will say he is one of those that showed up in the shape of his life.
Was it Skyler? Is that who it was? I ran into Skyler, and then I was, of course, doing what a left-handed middle child does. I was stirring it up in the research and development room, and I was really kind of stirring, trying to. And there's still some of those guys stung by that. You know, not feeling
they're very stung. They're very stung. As a matter of fact, I said to one of our analysts when he showed up for spring training, I won't out him, but, you know, I did say to Spencer when he walked in the door, you look phenomenal. And it looks like you spent your entire off season being athletic. But, you know, I love the fact that they're competitive, but, you know, in the world of who's great at intramural sports, I think we've all come to agree that Skyler has separated himself from the rest.
So tell me about this A-Rod that's delivered now a couple different times. When we were down there, I think in the late innings, he had a big hit to get a victory. Yesterday, he's got the two-run home run late. Tell me about this Alberto Rodriguez.
Alberto, if you recall, we picked him up in the summer of 2020 when we sent Taiwan Walker to Toronto in a deadline deal. And he's since played at the A levels for us. And, you know, 2021, Alberto Rodriguez really stood out for what he did on the field, quality of contact, performance at a young age in a faster league. And then last year, he struggled a little bit with promotion and didn't go quite as easily for him. And he's now on the 40-man roster, or was, and, you know, the clock was ticking. So this offseason, we moved him through waivers in anticipation of him not being ready to make the jump to the big league and not wanting to burn, you know, those last options. So we were fortunate enough to get him through. He showed up in great shape. He's played a very good defensive outfield, mostly in right, but can also play left, swings left-handed. And his quality of contact this spring has been fabulous. And he's had two really big, what I would call mature at bats to end games, or near the end of games, that have been, you know, the kind that stick with you and you talk about the next morning at the meeting.
Hey, one thing we always hear is that pitches don't move necessarily the same way in spring training in Arizona as they would later in the year, whether it's the heat or the dry desert air, whatever, the sliders don't drop as much, et cetera. How does that change the way you evaluate pitchers and or hitters as you're trying to figure out where everybody's at?
You know, hitters are usually going to have an advantage in Arizona spring training, particularly early. Pitchers are going to have a difficult time with consistency with their breaking ball. And it's a combination of, you know, the drier air makes the grip tougher to get and, or, you know, that tack in your fingers tougher to really get into. And the balls are just a little bit harder, because of that dry air. So, you try to remember that the breaking ball isn't naturally as crisp or as consistent as you're going to see it once the weather starts to warm, like it's happening right now. And but, you know, velocity, fastball, carry, command of your fastball is generally representative. So you really, what you're doing is you're taking breaking balls with a grain of salt for the first couple of weeks and understanding that hitters do have an advantage in this environment.
Hey, Jerry, we did not really see Tommy La Stella while we were down there. And I know he's still working his way back. I can't even say that I don't remember even bumping into him or seeing him necessarily. Where is he at right now? And where is some of that backup with Emo still working his way back? Where is some of that backup third base, second base, shortstop? Where is that in the process?
Depth. Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like, again, it's as good as we've had. You know, Sam Haggerty has played all over the infield already. He's played some third base and made some plays that frankly, we wouldn't have anticipated him making at third base. But this is as healthy as Sam has been, you know, bodily and particularly arm-wise, as at any time since he's been a Mariner. And, you know, Demo is, I would say, based on the information we're getting back from his rehab program, is he's closing in on playing. He's now at full go on the backfields and running, changing direction, all those good things. So still trending toward being ready for opening day. And Tommy is going to DH today in the game today. He's in a throwing program. We're hopeful that he can start playing defense by Monday, if not sooner than that, but minimally by Monday or early next week. But he's ready to start taking at bats and prepare himself. So he should also be ready for opening day. And, you know, beyond that, like every other team, if it requires you go to the fifth, sixth, and seventh person on your depth chart coming out of spring training, you're probably going to feel like you're a little short. And I'm imagining that 29 other teams would feel the same if you were assuming that four players weren't going to be ready. But we're not making that assumption. We think they'll be ready to go.
And bouncing around the league, we're starting to see some starting pitchers that are already dropping off, you know, opening day rosters. Has that changed or heated up the trade market at all as you're communicating with other folks in your business?
No, not at all. You know, right now it's still very quiet in that regard. Most teams are still assessing what they have internally. And, you know, and like us, you know, when you go out and watch us play right now, you get excited watching the Prelander Baroas and the Bryce Millers and the Emerson Hancocks and what they're doing. And it's not difficult to squint as a front office and say, okay, if we get to this point and these guys get pushed into action, we're confident they can do it. And, you know, and 2 weeks from now, when you're actually staring at opening day on the horizon and you're in that position, you might feel a little bit differently based on, you know, the stress that that would put on those young players and having to develop in double time. So nothing yet in terms of activity on the trade market or any change in that regard. But I think it's because teams are looking at their versions of those young pitchers in the same way that we would.
Salk and Shannon and I were all in one accord, which doesn't always happen. We were not, you know, not very often. We're all in agreement on something, but we just bounced around the ideas. We're starting to see these batting average numbers tick up just a little bit. And whether that is, as you said, just the advantage that spring training hitters have early on or not, we'll see, or whether that is the shift and some of the things that have come into play. But we kind of bantered about who we thought this year in 2023 would end the Mariners season with the highest batting average. Salk, Shannon, and I all came to the same person, same agreement. I'm curious who your answer would be on that.
To me, there are two potential great answers to this one, but it wouldn't surprise me if it was one of four or five. But I'd say your discussion is probably between Ty France and Julio. And it's Ty as a right-handed hitter, is an all-fields guy. And I think with the exception of the second half of last year when he was really banged up, has always been a bat-for-average hitter. And that's even in a time where you're able to relocate defenses. And Julio is just a naturally awesome hitter. So those are the two that I would put down if I had to pick who's going to be your best bat for average.
I like that description of Julio. I think we may use it. Just naturally awesome. The other name was Pollock, who's hit over 300, I think, a couple of times, and in and around that area. If he gets enough at bats, I would think he could be in that conversation as well.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, AJ's been that guy, and he'll have the advantage of, you know, like with JK, of not naturally always having to face the tougher right-hand pitching.
Right. And,
so it's in theory that helps prop up that batting average too. But I do think you're seeing it with some of the restrictions on shifting, especially with the left-handed hitters. We have seen so many balls go up the middle or in that, you know, kind of the four hole between the first baseman and second baseman, that for what seems like a decade, they've been outs, and in spring training, they've been hits. And actually, it's pretty refreshing to watch. There's more activity in the game.
So I was reading Shannon's piece yesterday, and she had Scott talking about that with Kelnick, and specifically saying, hey, instead of leaving the field 0-for-3, he ends up leaving 1-for-3. He doesn't crush the ball, but it goes through that hole between first and second. And the next thing you know, it's not a bad day for him, and he looks up, and his average, instead of being zero, is 333 for the day. Of all the people, I would think, I just look at Kelnick and think about the new rules between a shorter time to think in the batter's box, the ability for more hits to go through, and then what that can do for his confidence, and then with his speed, whatever changes with the base running, I would think he would benefit from these rules as much as anybody on your team.
Oh, I think so. I think there are three real gainers on our team with the restrictions that currently exist with shifting. And it's JK, it's Cal, and it's JP. I think those three guys in particular will benefit. JK has pulled so many balls hard to the right side of the field. And I could say the same about Cal, that have just turned into outs. And JP hits more balls on the ground than most of the other hitters in our lineup, and typically resides on that kind of middle to pull trajectory. So I think those guys will benefit in ways that others won't. And you're seeing it now with JK, and even, you know, using last night as an example, it's all right, he didn't chip in a hit, but he took his walk. And when you go through the maturation process, understanding that the single in the hole, the taking your walk, those are ways that you're contributing day in and day out. And we used to talk about it all the time when I was developing as a front office person. You have to stay rooted to the ability to get on base. And if you're taking your walk, if you're chipping in your single, the damage is going to start to come. And then all of a sudden, what looks, you know, what we would qualify the OPS, the overall look of that player's quality is going to be right about where it should be. If on your down days, you're finding your single through the hole or your walk.
Have you seen these numbers on spring training at this point compared to this point last year? Time of game is down from over 3 hours, 301 to 236. Runs per game are just up a tick. stolen bases are up, almost one stolen base attempt per game. And then this was the one that jumped out to me. The batting average on ground balls is up from 235 to 258. That's going to have, I would think, an enormous effect on the way baseball is played this year.
Enormous. And most of the things you just mentioned, you know, especially when we talk about the balls in play average and stolen base attempts, were things that we anticipated. I will say that the most refreshing part of this, and something we wouldn't have anticipated being quite as dramatic as it's been, is the time of game. And I'm able to make my dinner reservations for a little bit earlier. It's an amazing thing when you're there and you look up and you're an hour and a half and you're in the seventh inning and it's so crisp and the game is being played at a speed where it flies by and you're left excited the entire time. And you know, I think we'll get over some of the wonky in-game, you know, strike calls on a hitter for stepping out or a pitcher for holding. It's just a little bit to get used to, but it's refreshing to watch base runners attempting steals. You know, we're going through inter-squad games here in the mornings now with our minor leaguers and we're urging them to go at that. Just go, time the pitcher up and run and find out what you're capable of, because, you know, some of the new rules are going to benefit, you know, players who can steal bases. And we have, you know, between Colton Wong and Dylan Moore and Sam Haggerty and Julio Rodriguez, even Teoscar Hernandez and AJ Pollock, these are guys that can go steal a base.
Hold on. That's now you're leaving a name out there, and he told us, at least off the air, that he was going to get at least three bags this year, and that's Ty France.
And he tried one yesterday. Yeah, he took your advice.
I think he's probably going to be a little upset that you left him off that list.
Yeah, I think Ty might lead our league and lead our team in hitting, and I think he's got a chance to be a batting champ.
Hey, if there have been calculations, my last thing, Jerry, before we let you run, thank you again, as always, for the time and even moving it around today. Has Mr. Stanton calculated how many less grasshoppers, hot dogs, and beers are going to be sold in a 2-hour and 25-minute game versus 3-hour game?
I don't know the answer to that. I don't even know how you would begin to quantify how many grasshoppers are consumed on a given day. But, you know, I do think that the fans are going to enjoy the pace of play and the crispness at which it's amazing watching what's happening here, and the players seem to enjoy it as well. You know, it's something that generally gets a lot of positive feedback the next day in the clubhouse.
Kraken quiet at the deadline as a general manager for all the years, Jerry. What do you make of a team that is in a playoff position doing zero at the deadline?
So as I said to my good friend and fellow Kraken enthusiast, Pete Fortune, in our clubhouse, I tried to remind myself every day through the NHL trade deadline, they know how to do their job better than I do. you know, and I do think, and I've mentioned this in weeks past, I do think that, you know, the Kraken are not built in a very dissimilar way than we are. It's about depth. It's about being able to string together, you know, four lines and you just keep on coming. And that's the way we see ourselves, as a team that just keeps on coming. And I think that's pretty reflective of the way the Seahawks are built as well. And you know, I respect it. I like our team. Actually, I love our team. And you know, I don't know if the quiet deadline really represents how Ron Francis thinks about the Kraken. I know it's certainly not how I do. I like our team.
Pretty cool. Jerry, thank you. We'll talk to you next week.
You got it, guys.